3:08 on a Wednesday afternoon, and hi, I'm Rob Snow, and it's so great to be with you, and so great to welcome back Dr. Barry Dworkin to the Hal Anthony Studio for the Wednesday House Call, taking any health-related questions you might have at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, or 1-800-580-CFRA. Give us a call ASAP. Every single phone line is available right now. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great to see you.
And you too.
So, I want to talk about the senators from a medical perspective. And I know this can sometimes be difficult because you haven't had a chance to diagnose the star senator players, but these are fairly common injuries that have affected a number of Ottawa Senators players.
Right.
So I thought we could spend a few minutes here.
Sure.
Not so much lamenting the loss last night. Let's move on. But highlighting some of the health woes that the Senators have had. First of all, Kovalev is with a torn ACL, as is Milan Mikolic. So you have two of the top scorers for the hockey team. They're out with knee injuries. So what's a torn ACL? Because this sounds as though it has to be completely rebuilt.
Yeah, ACLs are...
Did you have this surgery?
Not ACL. ACL is an anterior cruciate ligament. It is a ligament that provides stability for the knee in a...
So when I look at my kneecap,
when you look at your kneecap,
is it on the inside of the leg or on the outside of the leg?
It's in the center of the knee.
In the center of the knee.
It runs from back to front, front to back. It's almost like an X.
Like an X.
An X, but it runs from the front to the back, not from side to side.
Okay.
So it provides stability forwards and backwards.
Okay.
So if it gets cut or severed, your knee loses its stability front and back. So you literally can see a sliding motion of your knee. It's called a drawer sign, meaning it's like when you pull a drawer out and, you know, choosing your socks out of the drawer, you're pulling the drawer out. It's that kind of movement you see with the knee when you rupture that ligament.
Right.
So there's no stability that way.
So how do they repair that? They surgically repair it, obviously.
Usually they have to take a tendon graft.
A graft,
yeah,
yes.
And they literally...
So they take that from another part of your body?
From another part of your body, and they will replace the ligament with this tendon, and it has to be attached to the bone. It takes a long time for it to heal, for it to provide any sort of stability within the knee joint itself.
Right.
So it takes months and months.
Well, they say, for example, with Alex Kovalev, minimum 4 months.
Yeah, minimum. Because it's quite invasive surgery. You're literally poking a hole in the bone to stuff in the tendon and then clipping it into place on two fronts, the bone on the bottom, the tibia, and then the femur. This is the thigh bone. And so that's what you're doing with this particular ligament and the tendon that you're using to replace it.
And
so,
then you would have to
rehab after that.
I suspect you would have to build up strength again and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you get atrophy of your quadricep muscle. It's a long haul. I mean, this is not something that you get better a couple of months.
Now, when this happens, can you eventually, say 4, 5, 6 months later, be back at 100%? Can it completely heal? Can you go back to being the player you were before, do you think? Or
that's a very good question.
Yeah. Hard to say?
It's hard to say because of the stresses that are put on the knee and how well they get back into shape, how old they are,
right,
if there's any other damage to the
knee. Well, you would think with an elite athlete, an NHL caliber hockey player, that they would be one step beyond the mere mortal, right?
Somebody who
doesn't exercise a lot or hasn't made physical fitness the entire focus of their life.
Well, if you're talking from an endurance standpoint, yes. But I mean, you look at other hockey players, Bobby Orr, no knees left.
Gretzky is the same way. The same way.
It takes a toll on you. Sure, your performance, your ability to perform is much greater than the average person. But your body and the bones are still bones. They still will wear down.
So those are the knees.
Yes.
And that's Kovalev and Mikolic. Filip Kuba was a very important defenseman for the Ottawa Senators this year, top four defenseman, and had all kinds of problems all year. But the major one that put him out for the season was he had to have back surgery on a herniated disc in his back. So just kind of walk us through that kind of thing, Dr. Dworkin, and what would be ahead for someone like that?
Well, herniated disc, if he had surgery, it usually implies that either they partially removed some of the disc, it's called the discectomy, or they do what's known as a microdiscectomy, removing the part of the disc that is pushing up against a nerve. Mm. That's sciatica, that kind of pain.
Sciatic, yeah.
Usually if it's in the lower back. And so they will, if it's extensively dislocated or extruding, coming out, they will do surgery to fix that.
But he had the surgery in his case in Los Angeles, at a hospital in Los Angeles.
Right. And so after that surgery, you still have to be very careful how you move, what pressure you put on your back. Things have to heal up. You have to monitor to see if there's any recurrence. Yeah. You can't bend and lift and you can't really do much. You have to take it very easy with that because you don't want to cause more damage to the disc. It's still surgery,
yes,
and it's still an area that's now weaker in your body. Mm. And so, yeah, you're out also for
months,
quite some time.
Months,
usually it's months. You're not going to put pressure on your back after back surgery.
Okay. One more quick one, because there's a rumor going around. I hate to spread rumors. You know that. That a Senators forward right now is playing with a hip flexor. You can play with a hip flexor, but you're obviously not going to be 100%. What is a hip flexor?
Hip flexor, the major muscle that's really termed the hip flexor is called your iliopsoas muscle. The iliopsoas muscle is a muscle that attaches to your hip bone or your thigh bone and runs up more towards the back. Your psoas muscle runs. It's the psoas muscle is your fili mignon. That's essentially what muscle it is.
Okay.
In cows, that's a psoas muscle.
Okay.
And so this allows you to flex your hip, or, you know, you're sitting here or standing up and you flex your hip upwards straight towards you, sort of lifting your knee up towards you and bending your leg.
Okay.
That's the hip flexor.
Right.
And so likely what has happened is it's torn or damaged. And so it makes it obviously much more difficult. You're trying to skate.
Painful.
And it is very painful.
Yeah.
And you're trying to skate and you're pushing off with that leg.
Because so you don't have
flexing,
a lot of power.
Your
power won't have the same speed that you had.
Your mobility is also affected.
Mobility is compromised.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. It's tough.
It's tough.
It's not figure skating.
It's not.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your call's coming up shortly for Dr. Barry Dworkin. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580, free phone call on Bell Mobility. Free long distance call as well at 1-800-580-CFRA. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here for the Wednesday house call. And Cindy is up first. Go ahead, Cindy.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I'm nervous.
That's okay.
I was just wondering, my doctor diagnosed me later on with parvovirus.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about that? Because I've looked on the internet, but I really don't understand it.
Well, there's only one type of parvovirus. Is just a certain type of virus. And there's only one known type that infects humans. It's called parvovirus B19. This particular virus, very common in children, causes a condition called fifth disease. It's called fifth disease because it was the fifth rash ever diagnosed in terms of studying children. It was the fifth rash that they found.
Hmm.
And it's a self-limited disease. It causes a typical slap cheek look on the face in children. And it's self-limited, tends to go away, doesn't really do much harm to children. In some cases, it can cause what's known as an arthritis or an idiopathic arthritis, meaning that you don't really know why it's happened. They just tend to have antibodies that attack their bones a bit and cause arthritis. But for the most part, it doesn't cause rheumatoid arthritis, doesn't do anything of that sort. And joint symptoms occur in about 8% of children and 60% of adults if they do get this infection. But it is self-limited and really it doesn't really lead to too much arthritis in adults. It's more so in children. That's pretty much all there is about that virus. It's a self-limited thing.
Okay. Suzanne on line two. Question about a colonoscopy, Suzanne.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
I am going to have a colonoscopy at the beginning of June, and the doctor said that they would administer a medication intravenously, I think, to relax,
yes,
make me relax. Can that be done under anesthetic, or do you have to be awake to have that procedure done? Can you tell me?
Well, they won't use general anesthetic. And the reason is when you have general anesthesia, it stops you from breathing. And then you have to be on a respirator in order to have a procedure. And that in itself has a whole host of other complications that you don't want to have to get into. When they do sedate you, though, you can fall asleep.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so, you know, it depends on the level of sedation and you are breathing. So with the colonoscopy I had done a few years ago.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. I fell asleep when they gave the sedative.
Oh,
and
good.
You feel a bit nauseous afterwards when you wake up, but otherwise, didn't feel a thing.
Oh, okay. That's all I wanted to know. Okay. If you didn't feel a thing. I'm just a little bit...
So just make sure, tell them that you want to be sedated well.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for your call.
Bye-bye.
521-TALK, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA to speak with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Margaret. Hello, Margaret.
Oh, hello. Hello, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
I have osteoporosis and 2 fractured vertebrae with that, you know. And the last couple of months, I've had terrific sciatica in both hips and thighs and et cetera. Now, I take Tramadol, about 100 milligrams, the hydrochloride, and Tylenol. I just wonder, is there anything else? Now, the first while, when I had the sciatica, I could only shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can lift my feet a bit more.
Okay.
And I just wondered, is there anything more that can be done about this?
With respect to the pain that you're having?
Yes.
You said you're taking Tramadol 100 milligrams?
Right. It's a 24-hour, you know.
Right. Well, that's actually a very low dose. The maximum dose for Tramadol is between 300 to 400 milligrams a day.
So it might be able to...
So that can be increased. There are other medications that can be added in addition to it. Amitriptyline is one of them that can be added at nighttime. Lyrica is another one. Gabapentin is another one. So there's certain anti-inflammatories if there's no contraindication to using them.
But she's on a weak dose.
She's taking a low dose.
A low dose, yes.
And so you titrate upwards according to pain response. So if you find that it is helping you, then certainly increasing the dose would be something to consider. But you'd have to speak to your physician about that who would, you know, prescribe a greater dose, and also to look at combinations. Amitriptyline can help you sleep at night. Lyrica can. Lyrica is not covered, though, by public health plans. It is covered by private health plans.
Yes.
So that is another potential option to use. Tramadol is sort of is in the class of a narcotic medication, but it's not in the same league as codeines or morphines or such as or medications of that sort. So it doesn't have the same potential for abuse or tolerance. So that is why usually it is used in this case before you step up to something stronger.
Well, Dr. Don Chow is my orthopedic, but he's really busy at this time. We had the council, so I'll be seeing him.
You should speak to your family doctor, though, about that, because your family doctor can certainly prescribe the medications for you to try and alleviate your pain.
I'll be seeing her this week, so I'm hoping to get a little more relief from it.
Okay.
Well, good luck, Margaret.
Thank you so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
More of your calls for Dr. Barry Dworkin coming up right after the 3:30 news, only here on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA. .339 on 580 CFRA, and Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. And I want to get to Frank's call right away. He's been waiting for quite some time. Frank, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Dworkin.
Yes, hi. I'm calling about my my wife. She got these, I'm not sure if I can call them blotches. They started under the armpits. She's currently breastfeeding. They started under the armpits. They're about the size of a dime or a nickel. They're very, very itchy. And but then they grew on the skin, you know, like they're got the size of a loony, and now they're about maybe 2 inches wide, and they spread down to the chest as well. She got a couple of them on the chest and on the sides, and she went to a clinic. They couldn't really tell what it was. They just gave her some cream, she went. So then for a second opinion, she went to a hospital just to get another second opinion, and the doctor there didn't know what it was either. But they gave her some cream for it to put on it, but he told her she couldn't use it if she was breastfeeding. It wasn't a good idea to use if she was breastfeeding.
All right, Dr. Dworkin. Dr. Dworkin has some questions.
So when you look at these blotches, is there one of the telltale signs of what it could be? Is when you look at the blotch, is it all red, or does it seem like the center of the blotch is a bit lighter in color and there's more red along the side. So more like a ring, almost like a target, looking at a target.
That's right. The outside of the blotch is maybe darker in color, and the center could be lighter or red, as you're saying.
Okay, because the most common thing that would happen, you know, she's for the most part a healthy person. So, you know, and she doesn't, it's what you're describing does not sound like a viral illness. It started under the armpit. It's an area that is hot, that gets hot and humid. And very commonly you can get a fungal infection in that area. That fungal infection specifically in that area would be called tinea corporis, which is it starts off as a small blotch and it expands. It's almost like a circle that just gets larger and larger. The ring gets larger and larger as it grows. And what fungal infections do is that they bud off, meaning that you'll get a blotch that sort of jumps and you get another blotch that appears next to it, but not necessarily connected to it. And then it just continues if left unattended to, it just continues and starts causing more inflammation and infection of the skin. So that would be the, you know, you have to